Okay, so yep. 4, 3. What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Tony Tequila from TonyTequilaTalks.com. Here with my special guest today, Gina Rock. Gina Rock, please say hi to everybody.
Hey there. Hi, how's everybody? It's really good to be on another show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so Gina Rock is probably known, and how I found her was that she's known as the longest flying Tinkerbell in Disney. Is it Disney history, period, or just Disneyland?
Yeah. Ever.
Ever, yeah. So, see,
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, the longest flying, yeah. I think the longest flying Tinkerbell before me was 7 years, and that was Judy Kaye.
Yeah, and I was reading that in your bio here. The reason I was drawn to Gina is because we have a common employer, or we had a common employer, and that was Ringling Brothers. And so I was kind of like just going through, I don't remember what I was doing. I was searching Ringling something alumni or trying to find somebody that I had worked with. And then I came across your name and read how you were the longest flying Tinkerbell in history. And so then I just started to go down that rabbit hole and started deep diving and figured, hey, she sounds like she would be an interesting guest. So I reached out to your assistant and he found out something that we're all going to find out right now. And now we have another connection, and that's through professional wrestling.
That's kind of a strange connection, but something that a lot of people don't know about me. Yeah,
that's interesting. And so some of the names that I saw were really interesting too, including one who most people don't consider a professional wrestler, and that's Andy Kaufman. Which was he was a big star at that time, right?
Well, yeah, him and Tony Danza. Tony Danza was big into the wrestling at the time, too. And how I met Andy Kaufman was I met a gentleman in the backyard at Bob Yerkes, where I started doing my circus performing. And I think you've read that in my bio. Bob Yerkes is the gentleman that started me in the circus.
Right.
And I was in his backyard, and there wasn't just circus performers in his backyard. There was all kinds of Hollywood stunt people. And one of the guys that was back there was this huge guy. I believe he was 6'5". He probably weighed about, 300 pounds. All I know is he was in amazing shape and he looked like a giant. And his name was Jay York. And I met him. He was throwing knives. He was doing a knife throwing act.
Yeah.
So, and he was actually more of a stuntman. And he also used to wrestle bears. So that's how I got into meeting the whole wrestling crowd, like Tony Danza, Andy Kaufman, Rowdy Roddy Piper, the whole group. I met them all.
And that's an eclectic group alone. I mean, just those three names are Tony Danza and Andy Kaufman. Obviously, you think of them sometimes together because of Taxi. But I think Andy Kaufman, when I hear Andy Kaufman, the wrestling fan in me, automatically the first other name that pops up is Jerry Lawler. And Jerry Lawler, I also connect with, when I hear Lawler, then I think Piper. And it's funny that they're connected. It's like a 12 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing. You had mentioned
I was very young then. I think I was, when I met Jay, I think I was probably 18 or 19 years old, possibly. I met Jay York. Actually, I met Jay York after I came back from Ringling Brothers, I think. I went to Ringling Brothers in 1976 and 77, did the Bicentennial Edition. And it was shortly after that when I met him in the 70s. When I met him in Bob Yerkes' backyard. I had already been doing circus performing, and then I met him. And I was trying to decide what to do after Ringling Brothers. And I met Jay, and it's funny because around, and I have a complicated maiden name that I don't really want to get into. Hard to understand. And he said, Gina, you cannot go to Vegas with that last name. You need a stage name. So it was this very famous wrestler. And Jay York, by the way, you know, he wrestled bears for a living. I mean, he was nuts. I mean, he actually died of alcoholism in the early 80s. But he was a great friend. We sat around and we came up with the name Gina DeMarco. So I ended up going to Las Vegas, and, you know, we can get into what I was doing at the time. But I was trying to decide if I was going to go on with my circus career, and it was Jay that helped me find that last name. So yeah. I became Gina DeMarco. Now, what I wish I had done, if I could go all the way back to when I met Joshua Schaefer, I would have used my stage name instead of using my real name.
Right.
So I wish I had done that.
And it's weird how performers, how we come up with our stage names. Some of us are lucky and are born with great names, or some people, because I'm not one, but some people are born with great names, and you're like, wow, that just sounds like a stage name.
Well, I happened to marry a gentleman that gave me a great last name. So the fact that I kept Rock, and we ended up divorcing in the 90s, and I remember the judge coming to me and saying, do you want to get rid of that last name? And I said, no, absolutely not. I mean, at the time I was a talent agent, and it was absolutely perfect to stick with Gina Rock.
Yeah, but it just rings. It rings.
But looking back, I really wish that I had gone with Gina DeMarco.
Right. Yeah. You know, we had talked about Bob Yerkes, and I'm a big Star Wars nerd. That's another thing that I was like, I saw that. I was like, oh my God, that's that. When I saw the name instantly, I was like, that's Boba Fett. I knew the name. Like, that's Boba Fett. That guy's one of the stunt guys for Boba Fett. I know that because that is my favorite character. And then reading that you read, that you rode the elephants in Ringling, that's something else we have in common. I was with the elephant crew while I was with Blue Crew.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So there's, as many people know, there was a red unit and there was a blue unit. I was on the red unit with Gunther Gable Williams for 2 years.
Gunther is so awesome.
I wasn't on the blue unit.
Yeah, I was on blue unit. I went with them from, I think I started in Dallas and I ended.
What year was it?
It would have been 96. I think it was like 8 weeks. I can't remember, something like that. But yeah, it was, my daughter had gotten sick, or I probably would have stayed a lot longer.
So what did you do for them?
I was in the elephant crew. So I was, you know, clean up and feeding and all that. Mm-hmm. And then of course the walks from the train cars to the area and back and stuff.
Well, you've probably read about it, but I have a big affinity for elephants. My father, who passed away at a very young age of 49, had a fondness for elephants, and he, long story short, he passed away before he saw me perform. And whenever I would ride, when I first learned to ride an elephant, that's actually when I found out that my father passed. And, I just, for years, I think for 10, at least 10 years, I would have these dreams that my father was watching me ride the elephant, that he saw me. And it went on for a long time. And as a result, I collect them. Where whenever I go, either overseas or I'm around the country and I see a really cute elephant, I buy it. And then what I do is if I have a very good friend that's going to move away or they get sick, I pass my elephants along to people. And
Oh,
so I pay my elephants forward. And as a result, my collection over the years has kind of diminished. So I have to start collecting them again because I always end up giving them away. So it's just a little thing that I do with elephants.
yeah, that's awesome. I love elephants. I wasn't, I mean, I was always like fascinated with them, but actually, after working with them for those 8 weeks, it is a whole different experience, as you know. It's I one of the things that I always got questioned about when I got back was, well, how did they really treat them? How do they really treat them? And I'm like, dude, the elephants while I was there were treated magnificently.
Yes, they were. And I wrote a story about it on LinkedIn. Being from California, of course, all the animal rights people probably didn't like it too much. But
Right.
I was very forthright, and you can still read about it on LinkedIn. I talked about the interaction I had with my elephant and the fact that I would go and feed him carrots and loaves of bread before I would ride him. So every time he'd see me coming to come ride him for the intermission, he'd get all excited to see
Is it
me because, I'd bring him treats.
It was a
And
treat, exactly.
yeah. But let me tell you the scary elephant story since we're on it.
Okay.
So some people don't know this, but the African elephants are very dangerous, and the Indian elephants are pretty docile. So I was watching a gal who did an elephant act with nothing but African elephants. They're the ones with the very, very pointed ears. The Indian
Right.
elephants have the round ears. So I'm kind of educating your audience. And I watched her get killed in the ring. She was doing the act, and you're not supposed to train elephants or work with elephants when they're in must season, and she did. And she ended up getting trampled. So that's my horrible elephant story. I know, there's a huge difference between their personality, and I think that maybe some people don't know about that.
Yeah, no, there is.
Yes.
Yeah, always one of the main handlers when I got when I landed, he was like the guy to pick me up at the airport, and he's like, "Do you know the difference between the elephants?" And I'm like, "Well, one's from Africa, one's from India. Those are the two things that I know." And he's like, "Well, can you tell them apart?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "There's a really easy way." And he like pulled up this, he had these pictures, and he's like, "Tell me which one is which." And I started looking at the pictures, and then I looked at the African elephant, and for some reason I was just like, "This is the African elephant." And he's like, "How'd you know?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm looking at the ears," and it, and then he's like, "Good. Exactly what do we tell people? You can tell by the ears because African elephants' ears are shaped like Africa. You know, they're kind of shaped like Africa if you look at them right." And I'm like, yeah, that was my exact thinking. And so
Well,
yeah.
you'll see elephant ear plants, and elephant ear plants are in the shape of an African elephant.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're very, very dangerous in musk season. And I, you know, it's still to this day, I cannot figure out how a woman, she'd been training these elephants for probably over 25 years. They worked with her. They live a long time. They live a lifetime like we do. And I don't know why she was performing with them at the time. It doesn't make any sense to me that a professional would do that.
Points when the show must not go on.
Not go on, yeah. Right.
Yeah. See, that's one thing, like, people don't realize is there's a lot of care and attention that comes to the animals that not only the handlers, but the people that are the trainers and stuff have to know what's going on. Like, we're always so attuned to what's going on with our elephants because of reasons like that. And I know I went in, like I said, I went in almost 20 years after you did, but I kept hearing about all the changes and how the hook wasn't used as much. And, you know, it was basically a touch tool now as more of a, as opposed to the old way when they would hook and pull and hook and pull.
Well, I'll tell you it was different with Gunther Gable Williams. I had the utmost respect. That's what's written in my LinkedIn article. Gunther Gable Williams raised almost all of his animals from babies. So they treated him really well. And he gave them a lot of respect. Now, since we're on the elephant story, I guess I should tell you about the time I got stepped on with a foot.
Oh.
So I was the girl. There's a picture of me on LinkedIn riding this elephant. That was the one I rode all the time. And I was the girl, you know, in the act where they all put their feet on each other's back. It's like a pyramid.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was the girl in the middle going, ta-da, right? After they all did that. So there's Gunther down there and the elephants, you know, get up, you know, they put their feet on the back of the elephant I'm riding to do the pyramid. And one of them missed and he was on top of my thigh.
Oh my God.
So I'm trying to, the music's going and it's, you know, the crowd's like all excited because they're doing this pyramid trick. And I have this giant foot on my leg. And I'm yelling down to Gunther going, trying to point to him what's going on because there's no way I can get this foot off my leg.
Right.
Until they get down. So, long story short, when after the act, I got down and I said, Gunther, I couldn't walk. He goes, what's wrong with you? And I said, I was yelling down to you. I said, the elephant's foot was on my leg. And he goes, well, maybe you were in the wrong position. And we ended up in like this big debate. And long story short, he was a lot more careful. And so what I did is I used to put my legs around the neck of the elephant.
Uh-huh.
From then on, when they did the trick where they did the pyramid, I put my legs on top of his head. So I would never get stepped on again.
Right. Well, you learned.
Yeah, I learned the hard way. So I had a big, huge bruise on my leg that, that lasted many, many weeks. So
yeah, I think Gable Jr. was our animal person, if I'm remembering right.
I don't know. I know that he went to the blue unit. Maybe he did. I thought he just took over for his dad. I saw Gunther right before he died. I was doing Tinkerbell at Disneyland, and I went across the street because Ringling Brothers was over there at the convention center, which is, by the way, how I met Judy Kay, who used to play as Tinkerbell. So I went over there and They knew I was Tinkerbell, and I went in to say hi to Gunther, and it was right before he passed away. I think it was about 6 months before. So I saw him right before he died. He was extraordinary, really.
I met him as a fan probably in 84, I want to say. I was about 10 or 12, and he was just an amazing person with his fans. And you could just see when you see him in the ring with the animals, and backstage, like you could just see that he just loved those animals, like kids.
But yeah, he would get up in the morning at 4 o'clock in the morning every single day, and he would go feed them himself, and he would raise them from babies. He let me bottle feed a couple of white tigers. It was an incredible experience, and he would raise them himself, and it was very special. I mean, there was a lot of really bad things going on with the whole animal rights. And I agree, by the way, I did state this in my LinkedIn article. I do agree that wild animals should not be used like that, nor should they ever be trained or hurt like that. I totally agreed with that. But the fact that they were raised in the human environment from a baby until full grown, to me, was totally different. You know,
Because
they
these
were raised in a
uh
human environment.
one of the things that PETA and some of the other groups don't realize is that by the time I was on crew at like in 96, I said, and up until the end, that none of those animals were probably ever in captured in from captivity. They were all born for Ringling or with Ringling or from another circus.
Yeah, well, when they finally retired, when I was on the road doing my disaster recovery work and found out that Ringling was closing, I did a tribute to them and thanked them profusely for, pulling in girls like me that had never done circus. And, the showgirls were mostly from the United States. The performers were mostly from overseas. And what a great experience. I mean, I think I was just 18 and a half when I went. And what a fantastic experience it was to live on a train and travel both East and West Coast. And I was definitely
Yeah.
a gypsy. There's no question about that.
And I think I'm still a gypsy at heart. Like, I really have a hard time staying in one place. But and I agree, it was working with the circus, you got to meet people you would never be able to meet from all over the world. I mean, Spain, Portugal, these I'm trying to remember. We had some, I want to say, people from like in Africa. They had something going on. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, you could meet these people that you'd never, a normal person wouldn't get to have a conversation with. Let's get back to the wrestling. There's the we're talking about you meeting Piper and Andy Kaufman, and how was it that your assistant said that you were set up on a you were supposed to go out on a date with one of these guys, or?
What happened was I was also hanging around a lot of musicians at the time, and Jay York had a lot to do with music, and introduced me to Delaney Bramlett, and a lot of those wrestlers were hanging around with a lot of the music people. And I wasn't dating Jay York. He just became a very, very good friend, and I don't think at the time I was dating. And he said, "How do you feel about going to dinner with Andy Kaufman?" And I'm like, "What?" I said, I'm definitely the alternative type. I suppose I'd fit right in. I said, give it a shot. So he was, Andy was very shy. We ended up, he didn't want to have dinner and face each other at a table. So he insisted that we sit at the bar. So we sat at the bar, and he was very, very much like his Lafka character. He was that character. It wasn't real easy to communicate with him, I'll be honest with you. What a great experience, but he was a very odd sort. I mean, the odd sort that he played on TV is exactly how he was. So I never really went on a second date with him, but it was fun
I
to meet
bet.
him and have dinner with him and be silly and to be around somebody that has, I ended up to be a talent agent back in the 80s. I did it for 25 years, and most inspiring was people like him that were extremely talented. I ended up, I was a talent agent for variety entertainers, but I was also a talent agent. I had a SAG franchise for a while, and the only people that I ever hired to do television roles or movie roles were characters. And so I fit right in. I mean, I was known as the variety talent booker, but I was also very well known for, booking people that had offbeat characters, and he was definitely one of them.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the movie Man on the Moon based on his life?
I think I remember it, but I think it's been a really long time, but I do remember that that came
Because
out.
I remember talking to a friend of mine who it was like a friend of a friend who knew Andy. And they're like, oh yeah, Jim Carrey just like totally nailed all these mannerisms of his. And
Yeah, I got to meet Jim one time too. I was at Nobu Restaurant in Malibu, and I had a chance to meet Jim Carrey one time, and he's also the character that he is as well.
it's funny like how some of these people are well, what do they say? Well, what they tell us in wrestling is find somebody that's similar to you and then turn it up and break the knob off, you know? And
Yeah, it was the same way with Gary Busey.
oh.
I had a little bit of a, I didn't really date him, but we hung out at his home. He loved to play guitar for me, and I met him at a New Year's Eve party, way back, I think in 2000 something, and he was living in Malibu at the time, and we didn't, he was all over the place doing New Year's, and I had a friend that owned a karate studio down there, and he was just a nut. We became friends, and he was another huge offbeat character that I got to hang out with. So, I really wasn't much for the Hollywood crowd, even though I was a talent agent. I didn't hang out with people like that. But he was another odd character that I just had a blast with because he was so different.
And this was obviously, you said like 2000, this was post accident, Gary Busey. So he was really out there.
His accident had been long, I think in the 80s.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it definitely affected him, you could tell. But the man was brilliant.
And
I mean, really quick-witted. He was, it's, I don't know, I'm hoping that one day maybe he'll listen to this, but I have to tell you a story about Busey. So he had this manager at the time. I guess he was known for being difficult to manage, but I met his manager and they found out that I had been at Ringling Brothers and they kept bugging me that they wanted to see my pictures. And I have this huge portfolio of me doing all this circus stuff, just like I do on my website. And so Gary gets a hold of the book. He says, "Please bring it over, let's hang." And he is like blown away with the pictures, with the circus pictures. He goes, "Gina, these are amazing." He goes, "What you have done in your lifetime is just, I mean, it's unbelievable." And his friend or his manager at the time lived in Sarasota and he wanted to give it to the Ringling Brothers Museum. So what I did is I went and I made a bunch of copies of pictures and I gave it to Gary Busey's manager. And long story short, it was supposed to end up in the Ringling Brothers Museum. But I went down to Sarasota. I was doing disaster recovery in the area at the time. And they ne it never ended up there. They were changing the museum. It was being updated and rebuilt, and they had no idea where it was.
Oh, wow.
So I was supposed to, the gal who was the curator at the time said, "Are you kidding? We would love to have your pictures, especially, with Gunther Gable Williams."
Yeah.
She wanted the Ringling Brothers pictures. And so I don't know whatever happened to it. It is my belief that Gary still has them.
They're gonna find him in his estate.
I just have a funny feeling, if his wife ever listens to this, because I know they have a kid together. He married shortly after I was hanging out with him. I think he met her about a year or less after I was hanging out with him. And they got married and had a kid. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he still has the pictures.
That's really funny.
He swore up and down that he doesn't have them, but I'm sure he does. And I made this great little book out of it. Either that or his manager took off them. I don't know,
It's
but it was a long time
going
ago.
to be one of those things like the Ruby Slippers, where like 40 years from now, they'll show up and they'll be like, oh, we've been looking for these for like 50 years.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with some of my costumes. There's a costume I'm wearing in online at my tinkerbell.org website, and it's a purple costume with rhinestones everywhere on it, and I made that, and I don't have it. So for some reason, I don't remember why, but sometime in the 90s, I think I actually sold it to this neighbor where I was living, and for the life of me, I can't remember why. But yeah, it was great being a variety talent agent. I really, really enjoyed it, and for Disney too, I booked the opening of Indiana Jones, and it was a media event, and I also had sword swallowers there and globe walkers and fire eaters and sword swallowers. And so, it was wonderful. I did Tinkerbell and I also booked talent, as an IC contractor.
That is really interesting. You were talking about your mother right now, and I was reading here like says that she helped at a worked at a helpline. Is that like a was that like a call-in helpline, or was that like a
My mother was all about charity. She loved doing charity. And she was always, my mother had this thing for picking up hitchhikers. We would go to the beach all the time, and my mother would stop and give people rides. And she was always handing out food. And my mother was very, very charitable. And she really enjoyed helping people. So one of the things she did do is she worked for hospice for cancer patients. but she also worked on a crisis hotline. So when I was younger, it kind of rubbed off on me, and I became a candy striper when I was, I believe, like 10 or 11. We lived across the street from a hospital, and I became a candy striper, and I really loved the volunteer work. And then, I took to it, right away at high school, at Cleveland High School. They had, I worked with autistic children towards the end of my time there when before I graduated for 6 months. So I donated my time with the autistic kids, and I had just had an affinity for, just like my mom did, for helping folks.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I ended up in disaster recovery, because it was part of me. Helping people after and during a crisis was just, I was raised by someone who believed that that's what you do.
Right. That's what I try to teach my kids is, hey, we might not have everything, but our house is always open. Our house seems to be the house where my kids' friends will be like, can we spend the night at your house? My parents are fighting or whatever's going on. And then our house is usually that house where everybody comes and they call or they can you ask your parents what I think I should do or whatever. And so my kids are all about like being open and that kind of stuff. We didn't raise them to judge people, to always be listening, because everybody's one bad day away from being homeless or you just don't know, one paycheck away from that kind of life. You know what I mean?
Well, I think my mother was also very much ahead of her time. My parents were from Queens and Long Island, but I was born in California. My dad was Navy. So my brother was born in Georgia, my sister was born in New Mexico, and I was the California native. And my mother, she had spent many years, doing cultural events. She absolutely loved ballet and opera and always went to the museum. And, this is how we were raised. As kids, my dad was a nuclear physicist, so he was the brains of the family. And, I had parents that taught us about the world and about life. And we lived very modestly. My dad was, in the upper 5th percentile of what he did for a living, but we lived a very, very modest life. We lived in a little house in Reseda, California, and there was no opulence there at all. You would never know in a million years of my father,
What's up, everybody? Tony Tequila from TonyTequilaTalks.com. Here to tell you the story of Papa. And the story goes like this. It's 1985. Papa was the king of Miami, strolling around town wearing his white suit, mesh loafers, dark shades, chatting up all the ladies. Papa knew everybody, and everybody knew Papa. He was the kind of guy you couldn't help but like. He had a big personality with a big heart. Papa always remembered your name, and when you needed weed, oh, he'd hook you up. He always had a stash of the good stuff. Papa loved to share the happiness. So, here's to Papa. He's always sharing the good times. And you guys can buy Papa's Herbs merch at papasherbs.com. PAPASHERB.com/merch. And you can get 20% discount on anything you buy there by using the promo code TonyTequila20. TonyTequila20. All together, all caps. That again is TonyTequila20. for 20% off papasherbs.com.
Had any kind of, you know, income that, you know, he taught us to be very humble. And, you know, we were, you know, he was a Navy guy and, you know, there was a lot of chores and just, I grew up in a really special family. It's, this is part of my book. I talk about, you know, the fact that I was so fortunate to have a father that was so brilliant and my mother was so well-rounded with the arts and the culture that came with her, followed her from New York. And I mean, I really think that that's why I've been able to do everything I've been able to do. It's, that's why I'm writing the book. So yeah. Many adventures, you know, I just kind of wanted to, everything. My mother stuck a book in my hand when I was 3 and she was an avid reader and I would read all about it. All these crazy things people would do, and I just wanted to do them. I wanted to do them, and so that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I hear that. I have that same affinity. I'm a voracious reader. I think I can knock out a book in a day, about 300 pages in a day, if I really just sit there and really enthralled. And it has opened me up to be open to people of, not only different cultures and different, you know, I'm always wanting to learn more things. And it's one of the reasons that I started the podcast is because I love talking to people and I love learning about other people's lives and things that we have in common and things that are, we don't have in common. But, you know, eventually we all have one thing in common. We're all humans.
Well, going back to Ringling Brothers, you know, I wrote about this a little bit because I went to college late and I started learning how to write. One of the greatest assets that I took from Ringling Brothers was meeting people from all over the world. I mean, this is, it wasn't just the culture I gained from my parents, but you'd walk down that Ringling Brothers train and you had the Bulgarians and you had the Russians and the French and the Germans and you'd have people from all these different countries. And what really stood out in my mind to this day is during dinner time, it was like going to some kind of crazy food fair because you would smell things. You would smell the foods from all these different countries.
Right.
And I still remember to this day that that was my favorite part, was meeting people from all over the world. And I'm going to mention this now because it kind of correlates with who I work for. Now, I work for Jacobs Engineering. And Jacobs Engineering has something like 55,000 people that literally work from all over the world. And I feel like I fit in because all of those, I've met so many of those cultures and I have been around so many of those different types of cultures from different parts of the world. And it's so wonderful to work for a company that embraces that. So, you know, it's a perfect fit for me working for them.
Yeah, that sounds like it, where you can, like I said, it's just weird that you can meet these people from all over the world. And even if you don't, their English is not great. And obviously your, you know, foreign language, depending on what you're speaking, won't be good. But you have these things in common. You know, your love for performing, your love for your job. I mean, like, I didn't really consider that a job. I loved getting up in the morning, even though it was at 5 o'clock in the morning to go feed and shovel and water. But, you know, it was fun. It was fun. I liked my job. I liked the people. And I didn't consider it work.
It was a great experience. This is one of the reasons I'm writing the book. because I really want kids to understand that the world, it's, you know, at the time I was doing multiple different things in my life. You know, I was running away with the circus and I was doing this and that and being a talent agent. And I ran a pizza restaurant. It's like that was not embraced back when I was being raised. It was like, why are you not following just
one job?
And so now I actually, there's another article on LinkedIn where I wrote about how the fact that I was so diverse in everything I did, because I kept wanting to learn all these different things. And speaking of which, this last weekend, I took a drone pilot's class. So I went back to college in 2015 and got my emergency management degree. And then I went to USC for geospatial intelligence. And then I decided that I wanted to learn be a drone pilot. And so I've decided to get my drone pilot's license so that I can incorporate the GIS in there. And, you know, hopefully I'll live well into my 80s. I don't mind saying my age. I'm 65 right now. Helps me keep track of my history. But I'm still going. You know, people are like, when are you going to retire? And I'm like, me? I'm still learning things. I'm still going to school. And so I just spent 2 days learning how to be a drone pilot. And I have to go to take a test at an FAA place, and that's real scary for me. So, I mean, continually learning, and that's what's so great about doing the podcast with you, because I didn't have to talk about all this stuff with Tinkerbell, which was great. Now, let's face it, it was a great job.
Thank you. The like I said, I tried to go where we have commonalities. And I'm a big Disney fan, but you know, when you've probably talked about it 1,000 times in the last 2 years, you know, it gets kind of monotonous. One last thing I wanted to kind of just touch on before we wrap up would be your work with FEMA. And I saw that your first job was with Katrina, and that you just continued your education over it. And you actually got a book out of it. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, so just to clarify, I started working for Parsons Brinckerhoff. I met a gentleman about a year before I retired from Tinkerbell. I met a gentleman who was inspecting homes as an independent contractor on a FEMA contract. And he found out that I was, you know, I think I had just started college. I went back to college in 2003 and I landed into a physical geography class and just loved it. And he found that out, and we had a mutual friend, and he said, what do you think about becoming a FEMA inspector? And I said, well, what is that? He said, well, when people's houses get, you know, destroyed by tornadoes and fires and floods and hurricanes, you go out and inspect their homes and you write up the damages, and then they get help from the federal government. And I said, that sounds like me. I said, do I get to travel? He goes, you will be traveling everywhere. So right now I have been to 38 states in 15 years.
Wow.
Not only did I travel in the beginning of my life with the circus, but now I did individual assistance for Parsons Brinckerhoff for 11.5 years. So what happened was about 2012, I remember walking into this house. There was a lot of kids. I think there was 3 children. And, you know, when the kids are younger, they're like between the age of like 5 and, or even younger than that, 4 and 9, you know, they always want the parents' attention, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to do the intake on this flooded home. It's, And I've got these three kids that are like keep interrupting me, and I'm trying to do this intake, and it just popped into my head. I said to these kids, I said, "Hey, do you guys like to draw?" And they said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, do you have any crayons?" And they said, "Yeah." And I said, "Do you have any paper?" And so they ran and they got their paper and their crayons. And I said, "What do you think about drawing me pictures of what's happened to your house?" And all of a sudden, I started this thing where every time I would go into a house after that, because what happened was not only did these kids make these incredible pictures, but I asked the parents for permission if I could take them with me. So I didn't have a written permission, but they verbally, I before I would leave the house, I said, "Can I take the pictures with me?" And the kids would sign their name and put their age. My sister's an artist, should make sure that they put their name and their age. And so after that, from 2012 until the time I retired in 2016, I started collecting pictures. Every time I would go in a house where there was a child, where they were vying for the parents' attention and I couldn't, get them, to stop, I'd ask them if they had crayons and paper. And that's how I was able to do my intake. Because the kids got such a big kick about doing these pictures. And not only that, they got to express their feelings about the disaster. They put it all out. It was like doing disaster art therapy. And so that's what I named the book. It was Disaster Art Therapy. And the parents loved the fact that I wanted to take the pictures. And then I finally met someone in Colorado in 2013. She was an art teacher. And she said, "Gina," her kid was making me a picture of a flooded house. "So, Gina, you need to make books out of these." And I said, "I do." She said, "It would be amazing." Yes, what you're basically doing is you're doing art therapy. And so that's what I did. And so I collected about 300 pictures from children over the years of all these crazy disasters and homes that they depicted in there and what happened to their house.
Yeah, because that's very cathartic for kids to express themselves that way. My daughter was going through chemo, not for anything cancer related. She has tumors that are on her nerves that are non-cancerous, but with the chemo, it helps shrink them and keep them small as well. And most of the time when she's in the hospital, she just colors and draws and. When she's in pain, that's what her go-to is. She pulls out her crayons and her book, and she'll start coloring. And she's 21, and she still finds it very cathartic for her to still do this. So, is that book available like on Amazon, or is it out of print?
Well, here's what's happened with the books, and it's good for me. I'm glad you asked me that question because it just so happens, I have three books full of pictures, and Joshua has them right now. Parsons Brinckerhoff had a hold of them because every time I filled up a book, I gave it to the engineering firm because I asked permission from them to collect these pictures from the children. And then when the lady in 2013, when I went to Colorado, she suggested I make books out of them. I went to my company and I said, "How would you feel if I made collect put all these pictures in books?" And so I ha already had the books like together for the disasters I went to. And so the gentleman that was the production supervisor, he took a hold of them and kept them in a safe place and showed them to people that worked there in the office because I was always in the field. And long story short, FEMA wouldn't let me publish it. They felt that it was a violation, even though the children were only putting their first name and not their last name. They would just put their first name and their age. They wouldn't let me publish it. So when I left, I decided to, when Joshua put up the website, he said, let's put it up here. But he has all three books. And I'm actually with an editor right now. I'm publishing a second book. It's a diet and health, it's a comedy diet book, is what it is. It has cartoons in it, and it's just a fun way to trick yourself into dieting. And anyway, I just found myself an editor, and I'm also writing an autobiography. So the book is not on Amazon because I decided to publish it just the way it was, but it needs to be. There's so many things, Tony, that I have to do at 65 years old. You know, when people tell me that they're retired and they don't know what to do with themselves, you know, I steadily work as much as I can for with the FEMA job. I work in public assistance now. Now that's totally different than individual assistance. I'm working with local, state, and nonprofit and tribal. And so I help write grants for cities that need help, that their roads have gotten damaged, or schools or city halls. So I'm doing public assistance now. But when I collected the pictures, I was doing individual assistance when I was going into people's. So the book is published on my website. Joshua's been bugging me to get that one done. But I've got three going at the same time, is the problem. So I have so much going on. And now, I don't know if you know this, but he just put up a fan page on Facebook. And I don't go on Facebook, but he put me up there, and all of a sudden it just went crazy. So there's been a lot of people asking to do podcasts with me now, and starting to sign a lot. What he does is he'll send me like 50 or 60 pictures at a time, and I have to autograph them. And so over the course of like 3 or 4 days, I'll sign like 50 or 60 pictures and send them back to him. So, long story short, no, that book is published on my website, but not physically published on for Amazon, but it will be
And
hopefully
that
soon.
website, you're I'm
And
sorry, that website.
my website is flyingtinkerbell.org,
Okay.
O-R-G.
And then I also have a note that says that people who want to talk to Gina, interview on her on a podcast or have her do a public speaking can email Joshua at disneyguides@yahoo.com or flyingtink@yahoo.com or visit his website at www.disneyguidegui.org. So I want.
Yep, Josh is great.
He was he
Yep,
he's really
he's
he's really good about returning emails and stuff like that. So if you guys want to reach out and talk to Gina as well, or maybe even to Joshua, because he's a big fan of hers as well. Those are the things. I'm gonna list all that stuff on my website. I'm going to edit tonight. And in closing, is there anything you wanted to leave us with? Any final thoughts or anything else?
Well, first, I want to say thank you so much, Tony, for, I work all day with doing the public assistance. I'm doing what they call as closeout and closing projects, and it's really fun to not write in a book and talk to people. And my life is pretty much, at home working all day and writing books, and I really don't get to talk to people too much. So this is so much fun to go over and talk about my history. And I want to thank you so much for letting me revisit Ringling Brothers and talk about the wrestlers and a lot of the stars that I met over the years. And thank you for taking me into a totally different direction. Oh, yeah,
not a problem. That's my scope. I like to do things a little different than most. So, like, it feels once I put the show up on my show description, it's weird because it's like it's wrestling, and then I have all these like wrestling company names tags that people that I know and someone, and then I have like all these other things, and then people are like, "Wow, you're really, you have a lot of different things." So I'm not a master of any trade, but I've had a lot of jobs, and that allowed me to talk to lots of people, which is going to make for interesting living. And you know, and like you said, we were introduced through Tinkerbell, but we were able to go through most of the show with only a few mentions of it, and you were able to talk about things that you probably hadn't. Like I said, Josh found out so many things just from my request that it was amazing. I could feel the excitement in his email, is what I should say. I could feel how excited he was to listen to this and hear all these things that he didn't know.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff that I've never talked about, and being, you know, the age I am, I'm trying to get it all down on paper before I forget. Yeah. So thank you so much, Tony. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time. You know, I'm like I said, I hopefully we get some results on your missing items. All that information will be on the website as well. Emails for both myself and Gina. If you find the flying trapeze necklace, the book with the pictures of Ringling, and the purple sequenced outfit, reach out to her at her website or to me at the links that are going to be below in the show note. And again, I thank Gina for her time, and we're out. Okay, Gina, thank you.